This is edition number 2020 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday the 5th of June, 2026. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 4th of June, 2026. My name is Kate Harris, and my fellow readers are
Christine Barraclough,
Cynthia Gosling,
and Hannah Stiff.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 4:30 and will set at around 9:20.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes a famous female aviator, the coming summer solstice, a trip to Book Corner and hedgehog noises.
But we begin with the main news items, which include outrage at litter on Cromer Beach, changes at Norfolk County Council, a sad mental health story and a fire in North Walsham. Let's start with those lead stories.
Locals have vented their anger after large amounts of litter were discarded in two scenic Norfolk coast towns. Cromer and Wells Next the Sea have seen piles of rubbish strewn on beaches and left by overflowing bins. Among the bank holiday waste were broken glass bottles and foil packaging on Cromer Beach, which posed an injury risk. Jill Boyle, Liberal Democrat councillor for the town, had described the mess as disgusting. She added, "In all the years I have walked on this stretch of beach, I and other locals have never seen anything like it." The district council and contractors, Serco, acted swiftly to remedy the situation caused by excessive littering by the public. Officers are continuing to closely monitor the beaches. Last weekend, littering returned to lower levels. Cleanups were carried out on 100 metres of the beach, which reportedly took up to 26 hours. North Norfolk District Council said extra bins were placed around the beach in anticipation of high visitor numbers. Photos posted to social media also showed overflowing bins in separate locations across Wells Next the Sea. One local said, "Can't believe people can be so irresponsible, leaving rubbish on the most beautiful beach." Another person commented, "They took it to the beach so they can take it back. Hate to think what their homes are like." The town's visitor information centre described it as environmentally harmful, unsightly, thoughtless and unnecessary, urging people to take rubbish away with them if bins are full. A spokesman from the district council said, "The majority of local residents and visitors to our beautiful beaches are very conscientious and dispose of their waste responsibly, either using the litter bins provided or by taking it home for household waste collection. We would like to thank the members of the public who helped collect litter left by others, as well as our regular volunteers who play an important role in helping to keep our beaches clean. Please enjoy the warm weather, and while out in the lovely North Norfolk countryside, both coastal and rural, please dispose of waste responsibly."
Reform UK has claimed it has an effective majority on Norfolk County Council thanks to an unlikely alliance with Rupert Lowe's Great Yarmouth First Party. Councillors new and old arrived at County Hall on Thursday, May the 28th, for the first time since the local elections, where Reform claimed victory but fell three seats short of an outright majority, winning 40 of the 84 seats available. David Bick, who was chosen as the new leader of the council, shrugged off concerns the party would be unable to govern, pointing to a convenient, albeit unspoken, arrangement with Great Yarmouth first. While Mr. Bick said no verbal agreement or coalition conversations had taken place, he said the two parties share a similar outlook on how the council should be run. "What you saw there was an effective majority," he said. "They have been both collaborative and very sensible, and like us, they're not interested in playing silly parlour games." He brushed aside suggestions that the public falling out between Nigel Farage and Rupert Lowe would see the two groups bicker rather than bond. "As long as it's in the interests of Norfolk residents, it's fine," he said. Mr. Bick's party had an eventful first day at County Hall. A combined 46 votes, made up of 39 Reform councillors and 7 Great Yarmouth First members in attendance, passed motions to scrap the council's net zero commitments and abolish 3 political assistant posts. The assistant roles, which have been in place since 2001, were administrative roles there to help the council's 3 main parties with briefs, memos and motions. Reform says it will save £160,000 a year. However, the first day of term was not without drama. Kay Mason Billig, the previous council leader, who now sits among just 8 Conservatives remaining on the council, accused Great Yarmouth First of selling out to Reform. The flashpoint for many was the decision to hand the chair of the scrutiny committee to Great Yarmouth First, the role that by convention goes to the main opposition party, would have been the Liberal Democrats, who won 13 seats under previous traditions.
A man who begged to be admitted to a mental health unit died from an overdose on the same day a hospital bed was finally found for him, an inquest heard. Mark Finnan, 57, had repeatedly pleaded for inpatient treatment in the months before his death, after his mental health deteriorated following a stroke. An inquest at Norfolk's Coroner's Court heard he became isolated, was unable to drive, and was increasingly consumed by paranoia and loneliness before his death in January last year. Mr. Finnan of Fern Drive, North Walsham, had lived with paranoid schizophrenia since the 1990s, but had been stable for many years. A gifted musician and photographer, he volunteered as a Meals on Wheels driver and remained active until suffering the stroke in 2022. His brother, Robert Finnan, described months of attempts by the family to secure more intensive support. "We wanted to help. He wanted help," he said. "We would have gone private, but we didn't know where to go, and nobody could tell us." In June 2024, Mr. Finnan's GP warned about the amount of medication he had access to while expressing suicidal thoughts. On November 16th, Robert drove his brother to Helston Hospital, pleading for help. However, the family said he was refused admission and advised to contact NHS 111. Robert told the court repeated calls for help were not actioned. His cries for help increased. There were repeated acts of self-harm for which he was treated at hospital. He told professionals he wanted admission to a mental health unit. Dr. Alan Bakkanen, Associate Specialist in Psychiatry for the Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust, NSFT, said his behaviour was more consistent with chronic loneliness and long-standing schizophrenia than an acute psychotic crisis requiring compulsory detention under the Mental Health Act. Community mental health teams attempted to increase social support and provided information about groups and activities, while Norfolk County Council had been exploring supported accommodation options before his death. On January 11th, Mr. Finnan's sister alerted relatives after he told her he had attempted to electrocute himself. A mental health nurse concluded it was unsafe for him to remain home alone and successfully requested a bed at Helston Hospital. But by the time his brother drove him there, Mr. Finnan had already taken a significant overdose. He was transferred by ambulance to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. He deteriorated rapidly and died later that evening. Assistant Coroner Yvonne Blake said Mr. Finnan had good care from professionals but concluded that communication between agencies could have been better. The crux of this case was the loneliness he felt, and that is a difficult thing for agencies to solve, she said. Following the hearing, relatives called for clearer information and guidance to be made available for families trying to navigate mental health services during a crisis. NSFT said it would work to provide this.
A fire swept from a shed into three homes on a North Norfolk estate at the weekend. The blaze broke out about 1:30 p.m. on Saturday in a shed in the front garden of a property on Howlett Close in North Walsham. Flames spread rapidly along the fencing into the main house before damaging two neighbouring homes. The shed was destroyed and the house, operated by Broadland Housing, suffered extensive damage. It is understood the family living there are now staying in temporary accommodation. Fire crews brought the blaze under control within an hour, though they remained on the scene for several hours later. By yesterday morning, the houses were still cordoned off with fire brigade tape. The charred remains of the shed and its contents lay in the front garden, while the houses' doors and windows had been destroyed and were boarded up. Robert Beskerby, 66, who has lived in the neighbourhood for 20 years, said, "We had just come back from Lowestoft and we saw the blaze. Everybody was rounded up out of the houses." Another neighbour, who did not wish to be named, said she initially thought the smoke was from a barbecue. "We were in the garden when we saw a bit of smoke," she said. "Then it smelled like rubber burning. The next thing, the shed in the front garden was on fire. I saw a young lad pushing a moped out of the garden." The fire spread rapidly, first to the neighbouring house on the left and then the right. People were wetting the fence to try to stop it spreading. In the aftermath of the blaze, Briston Clothes Bank launched an appeal to support the affected family. "I have been asked to help to support a local family in North Walsham who have sadly lost their home due to a fire," the appeal said. "Donations are being sought for a 1-year-old girl, a 13-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl, and for men and women's clothing."
A man has died after a motorbike crash. The motorcyclist, a man in his 50s, was killed when his red Ducati Panigale left the road and hit a tree on the A1062 Norwich Road in Horning at around 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, May the 26th. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Emergency services, including the air ambulance, attended and the road was closed until 1:30 a.m. on Wednesday. Police do not yet know why the collision happened and are now appealing for witnesses and information. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said, "Officers would like to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the collision or manner of driving prior to the collision. Anyone with information or dashcam footage is encouraged to contact police via their website by calling 01953 424048 or emailing sciu@norfolk.police.uk. This is the 9th known motorcyclist death on the roads in Norfolk so far this year. Last month, Norfolk Constabulary urged bikers to take time to check their bikes, refresh their skills, and ride to the conditions, particularly on roads that may have deteriorated over the winter.
A large tree fell across a river on the Norfolk Broads. At about 9 a.m. on Sunday, a large tree fell across the River Bure, about 250 yards downstream of Coltishall Lock. It was said to be completely blocking the waterway. It was reported that a private motor cruiser was blocked off by the obstruction. The waterway has since reopened.
A boat was towed to safety after breaking down at sea. The 18-foot fishing skiff, with two people on board, suffered mechanical failure about 1 mile north of Clye Beach on Friday. Wells RNLI volunteers launched the inshore lifeboat at 8:58 a.m. following a request from Humber Coast Guard. Chris Hardy, lifeboat operations manager at Wells RNLI, said, "While towing is not undertaken as a matter of routine, in this case it was clear that a tow was the safest way to resolve the situation. It helped prevent further risk to the people on board, avoided the vessel remaining disabled offshore, and reduced the risk of the skiff becoming more of a navigational hazard to other water users." After an on-scene assessment, the crew determined the vessel could not return to the shore under its own power. A tow was agreed upon and began at 9:29 a.m. The skiff was brought back to Clye Beach by 9:40 a.m. and recovered onto its trailer. The lifeboat then returned via Holcombe Beach for a low water recovery.
The daughter of a man who fell to his death from the Norfolk Coast Path has described him as an utterly beautiful human being. Eliza Nash said her father, Peter Pegnell, a poet, was a remarkable and creative man who had enjoyed a varied career in the arts. Mr. Pegnell published several of his own poetry collections. The 76-year-old was also an obituary writer, teacher, and town councillor in Sheringham. His body was found on the beach at the foot of the cliffs on the western edge of the town on the morning of Tuesday, May 26th. Witnesses had seen him fall. Police say his death is not being treated as suspicious. The 76-year-old grew up in West London and was taught by Seamus Heaney, alongside Carol Ann Duffy and Simon Armitage. He studied at the University of Ulster in Ireland and also earned a doctorate in Shakespeare from the University of York. Peter Pegnell was regarded as exceptionally intelligent and well-read. Alongside his work as a counsellor, he taught Latin at Fakenham Academy and hosted poetry workshops. He was also the director of a poetry festival held in Portugal.
Our next few news stories include a woman jailed for stealing a taxi, an exhausting role at Sheringham Little Theatre, a warning over venomous fish, and a fatal e-bike accident.
A 25-year-old woman has been jailed for stealing a taxi, damaging property, and assaulting emergency workers. Mia Stebbings of Vicarage Street in North Walsham was sentenced to 22 months in prison last Friday. Her most recent offence took place on March the 18th after she got a taxi from Norwich bus station to Dereham. When the driver left the taxi to find the address, Stebbings moved into the driver's seat and drove off. Shortly after, police were alerted to a collision involving the stolen taxi in Commercial Road. The crash caused damage to several parked vehicles. An off-duty police officer provided first aid at the scene until emergency services arrived. Stebbings was taken to hospital for checks before being arrested. She was later charged with aggravated vehicle taking, dangerous driving, driving while disqualified, and driving without insurance. Dashcam footage revealed that she had also crashed into a police vehicle outside Dereham Police Station. She appeared in court for that incident as well as two others. The first, on March the 15th, involved an accident at North Walsham Police Station. Officers heard banging from the rear access door and found Stebbings outside. She had smashed the glass panels with a hammer and was charged with criminal damage, possession of an offensive weapon, and being in an enclosed premises. The second incident happened on September the 24th, 2025, when two paramedics were assaulted while responding to a call at a pub in North Walsham. Stebbings was charged with two counts of assaulting an emergency worker. She was sentenced to 22 months imprisonment, a 35-month driving ban, and ordered to pay a £187 surcharge.
A theatre director has called repertory theatre exhausting and terrifying as actors prepare to juggle multiple roles at a seaside venue. Debbie Thompson, director of Sheringham Little Theatre, is preparing for a summer season of fast-paced repertory theatre at one of the few remaining venues to keep the tradition alive. Sheringham's six-week programme will feature comedy, mystery and music, all powered by a seven-strong professional cast and a dedicated backstage crew. Miss Thompson said, "It's exhausting, terrifying, very pressured, and you really have to work hard. But it's the best way to learn after coming out of drama school, doing so many parts in such a short space of time. With a West End show, you have 6 weeks of lead-in, plus a week of previews, so by opening night, you know the show so well. In rep, you get a few days. Cast members will rehearse one play during the day while performing another in the evening. They must be ready to rotate through multiple productions as the season progresses." Despite its demands, Miss Thompson remains a passionate advocate for the format. She said, "There are only a handful of rep venues left, mostly along the East Anglian coast." She said, "We are proud to be among them. Our audiences love traditional rep as part of their traditional seaside holiday. It remains an important training ground for actors and backstage people, from writers to stage crew and costumes." Director Simon Thompson, who began his career in rep before moving into directing, said the tight turnaround requires versatile people who can make decisions and changes quickly. Actor Rachel Cummins said it was a brilliant experience, where as an actor you have to make bold choices quickly, work well in a short rehearsal period, and throw yourself in. Sheringham Little Theatre's summer season opens on July the 29th. For tickets and more information on the season's plays, visit sheringhamlittletheatre.com or call the box office on 01263 822 347.
People are urged to be on their guard about venomous fish buried in the sand on the Norfolk coastline. Haysborough Coast Watch is among the first organisations to issue a warning about weaverfish this year. There are two types of weaverfish in the UK, lesser and great. They spend most of their lives buried in the sand, but when disturbed, they shoot up their black dorsal fin in defence, injecting a painful venom into unsuspecting victims. A Coast Watch spokesman said, she said that if you are stung, it is best to rinse stings with seawater, not fresh water. Remove visible spines using tweezers or a bank guard and soak the affected area in very warm water for at least 30 minutes. The heat helps neutralise the venom. Paracetamol or ibuprofen can be taken to help relieve discomfort. People are advised not to use ice or cold packs, touch the spines with bare hands, or urinate on the sting. Help should be sought immediately from lifeguards if on a lifeguarded beach. According to the NHS, a visit to a minor injuries unit is recommended if severe pain continues after soaking or if the sting is near the eyes, mouth or throat. Beachgoers are urged to dial 999 for an ambulance if they experience a severe reaction, such as difficulty in breathing, nausea or dizziness. Prevention measures include wearing jelly shoes, wetsuit boots, or old trainers while paddling in shallow water. Shuffling feet along the sand rather than lifting them helps disturb the sand and scare away hidden weaver fish before contact.
A man died after he was flung over the handlebars of his e-bike while travelling at about 20 miles an hour, when the front wheel fell off after he had modified it using an online kit and a YouTube video. Lucas Scornog, 42, suffered serious spinal injuries after crashing while test riding the bicycle near his home in Plumstead, near Holt. The father of three was taken to hospital, where he died 4 days later. An inquest into his death was told Mr. Scornog was training to be a nurse and had been due to get married in March. He had been travelling at between 15 and 20 miles an hour on Cherry Tree Road in the village when the wheel came off. He was thrown over the handlebars and landed headfirst into the road. It is not clear if he had been wearing a helmet. Family member Mike Wilton told the court the e-bike had previously developed a fault, causing the front wheel to lock and detach. This was not the first time it had happened, he said. Lucas had found a fix on the internet and was on a test drive when this happened. The hearing was told the bike had been modified beyond its original manufacturer's specification, after Mr. Scornog, who was born in Poland and worked as a carer before becoming a trainee nurse, fitted a conversion kit himself. In the accident, at around 6:30 p.m. on June the 24th, 2025, he suffered a large laceration to the left side of his head and reduced movement and sensation in his arms and legs. However, he remained conscious before being taken to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. Initially, he showed signs of improvement and regained some power in his lower limbs. By June the 27th, his condition appeared stable and he was said to be making good progress. However, doctors later suspected an infection linked to his head wound after he developed a temperature and a rash. 2 days later, staff noted increasing confusion, agitation and worsening breathing difficulties. His doctor wanted Mr. Scornog sat upright to improve his breathing, but concerns remained about worsening the spinal injury. The picture then changed dramatically when he began vomiting and suffered a cardiac arrest. Despite emergency ventilation and prolonged CPR, his condition continued to deteriorate. Doctors acted to place him on life support, but his condition became unsurvivable before the specialist team could arrive. Mr. Scornog's fiancée, Claire Wilton, told the inquest of her distressing memories of his final days in hospital. "The deterioration between Saturday when I visited and Sunday when he died will haunt me," she said. Ms. Wilton described her partner of 11 years as a kind, loving partner and father who was full of fun. She said Mr. Scornog had spent 15 years caring for others and was passionately pursuing a career in nursing. Nursing was a career path he had mapped out after working as a carer and was pursuing it with enthusiasm, she said. He had a deep desire to help people. She thanked intensive care staff for their efforts to save him, adding, "He was our rock and our strength. We are devastated." The court heard a patient safety review acknowledged an unexpected deviation in his condition, but no concerns requiring a prevention of future deaths report was identified. The coroner, Joanna Thompson, noted hospital policy was later updated in November to clarify that respiratory needs should take priority over spinal alignment and the continued use of hard collar in deteriorating patients. Ms. Thompson recorded a conclusion of accidental death and expressed her sincere condolences to Mr. Scornog's family.
A pub and theatre venue has had to enforce stricter parking rules due to ongoing issues. The Black Swan Pub and Theatre in North Walsham will now be monitored parking in the private car park, and people who use it without visiting the pub could have their vehicle clamped and face a fine. A spokesman for the community-led pub said, "Due to ongoing issues with non-customer parking, blocked vehicles and misuse of the space, we've had to introduce clearer signage and barriers around our private car park. Parking is now managed as a not-for-profit controlled parking zone, with monitoring and enforcement measures in place, including clamping where necessary and a release fee of £100. Drivers using the space are being urged to park in the customer bays provided and to be mindful of not blocking vehicles. Customers are also advised to tell bar staff of their bay number when visiting." A spokesman for the pub added, "There is also a public pay and display car park directly beside us, which is free from 6 p.m. onwards. Thanks for your understanding and continued support."
Visitors can now enjoy a full day out at a National Trust estate thanks to an extended bus route. Sanders Coaches has launched a new journey on one of its services to Felbrigg Hall. The service started back in 2023, but we have recently added an extra journey so that people can spend the whole day there, a spokesman for the company said. The bus runs through the heart of the estate, offering views across the parkland and towards the hall. The service departs from Sheringham at 9:15 a.m. and Cromer at 9:50 a.m. with morning buses reaching Felbrigg Hall car park beside the visitor information boards. Return journeys to Cromer depart at 1:22 p.m., 2:40 p.m. and 3:37 p.m., while buses to Sheringham leave at 1:52 p.m. and 4:20 p.m. As part of the Good Journey scheme, visitors arriving by bus can receive 20% off admission to Felbrigg Hall and 10% off in the cafe. Passengers can use concession passes on board the bus, which is wheelchair accessible.
A Father's Day memorial service is being held to help people remember those they've lost. Cromer Crematorium will host the service at 10 a.m. on Sunday, June the 21st, to provide a space for reflection and remembrance. It is open to anyone who wishes to honour a father, father figure, or child. The service will be led by celebrant Stuart Kenrick. Mark Carpenter, manager of Cromer Crematorium, said, "Over the Father's Day period, we are holding in our thoughts all those missing their father, a father figure, and fathers who are bereaved of a child. They are all warmly welcome to join us on June the 21st for some quiet reflection in our comfortable chapel and beautiful grounds." Father's Day is one of those annual occasions when a loss can be felt more, and we want to ensure people know that they are very welcome to take comfort in paying tribute to their loved ones at our crematorium. Visitors can leave Father's Day cards, messages and other tributes in the crematorium's Letters to Heaven postbox.
A dessert shop owner is urging customers to treat her business with respect after visitors mistreated the facilities. Norfolk Crumble in Cromer is a much-loved spot for those with a sweet tooth to stop in and grab anything from a classic apple crumble to an Eton mess or a special tiramisu crumble. However, on Thursday, owner Shelley Crosby was left disheartened after customers stuck gum on the furniture and cigarettes were stubbed out on the paintwork, amongst other things. "I had been working flat out and had to remove gum from the furniture twice," Miss Crosby said. 99.9% of our fantastic customers treat our shop with respect, and I thank them very much for this. Let's keep Norfolk Crumble looking beautiful. The Crumble shop in Hamilton Road opened in October last year. For those who prefer a cold treat, the shop also serves indulgent ice cream. Milkshakes, which are made using ice cream from local business, Dan's Luxury Norfolk Ice Cream.
You are listening to edition number 2020 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 5th of June, 2026. Still to come, there are items about new homes and stores closing. And of course, the Mardler magazine supplement. But with no letters or obituaries in the paper, here are some local events.
On Sunday the 7th of June, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m, there will be an open day at Brett's Wood near Barford. Contact 07972 869 388. Starting at 1 p.m. is a jazz afternoon tea at the Barnum Broom Hotel, Golf and Spa, Honingham Road, Barnum Broom, costing £39.95 per person. The perfect soundtrack to your afternoon. Come and enjoy a traditional English afternoon tea set to the soulful sounds of live jazz. Contact 01603 759 393. At 7 p.m, you can hear Flower Days by Samantha Waits and M.G. Bolter at the Norfolk Wildlife Trust Clye and Salthouse Marshes Visitor Centre, Coast Road, Clye next the sea, with a cost of £17.43 per person. An evening with acclaimed musicians, a new folk collaboration of music inspired by flowers and cultural meaning through history. Contact 01603 625 540.
On Wednesday the 10th of June, from 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m, you can listen to the medieval bells at St Nicholas Church, Swayfield, Trumpch Road, North Walsham. Contact 01692 402 624.
And on Thursday the 11th of June, starting at 11 a.m, a guided walk will take place in search of flowers, plants and butterflies at the Norfolk Wildlife Trust Holme Dunes Visitor Centre, Broadwater Road, Holme next the sea, near Hunstanton, with a cost of £7.33 per person. Contact 01603 625 540. And finally, starting at 7:30 p.m, you can hear a live gig full of warmth, wit and intimacy by Sarah McQuaid. Located at the Deepdale Camping and Rooms, 1 Deepdale Granary, Burnham Deepdale, with costs between £12 and £15. Contact 01485 210 256.
We now turn to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we recall the visits to Norwich of a famous female aviator, look ahead to the coming summer solstice, visit Book Corner, and discover that hedgehogs might be talking.
Let's start with the story of when one of the world's most famous women landed in Norwich. This article was published in the North Norfolk News of the 30th of April, 2026. It was 95 years ago when a large crowd gathered on Mousehold Aerodrome in Norwich. They looked to the sky and waited for a very special person to arrive. Because of a strong headwind, it took some time for 2 planes from London to fly to their destination, where they circled the aerodrome before landing as the welcoming party waved and clapped. In one plane was Colonel Shelmerdine, the Director of Civil Aviation in 1931, but it was the pilot in the other craft who the people had been looking forward to greeting. Her name was Amy Johnson. Less than a year before, in May 1930, she had made her solo flight from England to Australia and became one of the best-loved and respected women in the land. It had taken her almost 3 weeks to reach Sydney, an extraordinary achievement. Amy was world famous, and we took her to our hearts when she made her first visit to Norwich. She was invited to speak at the annual Spring Ball by members of the Norfolk and Norwich Aero Club, which was held at the popular Spring Gardens in Mountergate. After landing at Mousehold, she was led into the clubhouse by young Pat Green. Amy would be spending the night with her and her parents, Mr. and Mrs. Tim Green of Earlham Road. The family ran the famous outfitter's shop in the Haymarket. The Spring Ball was attended by around 250 people, and the music was provided by the much-loved Percy Cohen and his Spring Ball band. Those attending included the Lord Lieutenant of Norfolk, Russell J. Coleman, the Chief Constable of Norfolk, Captain Stephen H. Van Neck, Captain Harmer, Chairman of the Club, former Sheriff Charles Watling, and the Lord Mayor of Norwich, Mabel Clarkson. The speakers included Russell Coleman, and there were cries of shame when he admitted he had never flown and had no desire to do so, preferring to travel on the sea. But, he added to great applause, I have had the honour of shaking hands with Miss Amy Johnson. Straight-talking Lord Mayor Mabel Clarkson told the gathering that building a municipal airport would provide work for many people, but would be a costly undertaking. And she was pleased to hear that the Aero Club would not have a large air display in 1931, I think there is no meaner crowd characteristic than that of watching other people endanger their lives purely for the pleasure and amusement of that same crowd, half of whom wouldn't go up in an aeroplane if they had the chance. When it was Amy's turn to address the gathering, she said, "Every city worthy of the name of city will have an aerodrome sooner or later, and the people who will get the chief glory are those who will have the courage and devotion to get on with the job, instead of waiting until every other city has got an aerodrome. Norwich ought not to be content with being passed on the way from London to the north. It should be at once a calling place, and then everyone who had come once and found it a place of wonderful hospitality would want to come again," she said. Amy also called for more attention to be given to guiding aircraft from the ground. "We do not like to fly along to an aerodrome and find only a caretaker who has gone to sleep. In this country, and Europe generally, not enough attention is paid to guiding aircraft from the ground," she said. She went on to fly with the Air Transport Auxiliary during the Second World War, and 10 years after her visit to Norwich, her plane crashed into the Thames estuary. She bailed out, but her body was never found. She was 37.
The summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere falls on Sunday, June the 21st this year. So for our next article, we hear from MADLA Secretary Anne Allen as she recounts how celebrating the solstice brings her closer to nature. The summer solstice is the longest day of the year, with the sun rising just before 4:30 and setting around 9:20 p.m., with residual daylight lingering on for a further hour. In times long ago, our ancestors celebrated this day by staying up all night to watch the sunrise. Oakwood bonfires were lit on hillsides. People leapt over fires to ensure the fertility of the land and their abundance in love and fortune, celebrating with joyous dancing. Farmers, with lighted torches, circled their crops three times, celebrating the Earth Mother in the hope of reaping a bountiful harvest. For many years, every solstice morning, I have risen at some unearthly hour to watch the solstice sunrise. Watching the sun rise over the horizon or appear to emerge from the sea, for me, is magical. This year, my chosen location was Thurn Mill. Mists were swirling over the river and reed beds, giving a mystical atmosphere. Birds were singing in the pre-dawn light. The moored boats, silent with people still slumbering, we tiptoed along the path to the mill. The white body of the drainage pump, sails reaching to the sky, silhouetted against the already brightening sky. I watched bands of oranges blending into yellows on the horizon, with the golden radiance intensifying at the precise spot of sunrise. Literally a few moments later, the tip of a luminous golden orb appeared over the treetops of the distant horizon. The sphere became bigger, brighter, more radiant, more complete, flooding the landscape in golden rays of sunlight, travelling upwards, ever brighter, fading and dissolving the vivid orange hues. Mission accomplished. Just a few more photographs before we relaxed on the bench by the mill with the warmth of the sun on our faces. With a mug of hot coffee from the flask in one hand and a delicious piece of Sarah Nelson's gingerbread in the other, we felt privileged to feel so close to nature and to be able to witness one of nature's amazing spectacles. Simple pleasures. It just felt so good to be alive. And if that wasn't enough to convince you to set your alarm clock, here is a short poem entitled Midsummer's Eve by American artist, author and poet Stephanie Laird. Midsummer's Eve, the blessings of light, with the longest day and shortest night. The earth as it turns, the spin of the wheel, the planet's way to restore and heal. Replenish your spirit in the light and the glow. Rejoice in nature's rhythm and flow. May you find peace and may you find health in the bounty of the sun's light and wealth. And as the wheel turns to shorter days, may well-being be yours in the coming phase.
In this month's Book Corner, the Mardler's resident librarian, Lorna, discovers an eclectic selection of books featuring June in some way. Our first book choice is a gripping murder mystery from the author of the Shetland and Vera series. A Day in the Death of Dorothea Cassidy by Anne Cleves introduces us to Dorothea, for whom Thursdays were special. Each week she looked forward to the one day she could call her own. On Thursdays, she always planned to visit people who wanted to see. But one Thursday in June was more special than any other. It was the day that Dorothea Cassidy was strangled. As preparations began for the local summer carnival, Inspector Stephen Ramsay painstakingly reconstructed Dorothea's last hours. He soon discovered that Dorothea had visited many people, including a lonely old woman, a disturbed adolescent, and a compulsive gambler. In fact, everyone she had visited was haunted somehow by Dorothea's goodness. So which of them could possibly have wanted her dead? As dusk fell on Carnival Day, Ramsay's murder investigation reached its chilling climax. This is a pacey, engaging story with a cleverly designed plot and plenty of twists and turns. Next, we have a powerful historical novel called 4 Days in June by Ian Gale. It's June 1815, and three armies met on the fields of Waterloo. Napoleon had just escaped from Elba and has rallied the French army. The British armies, previously disbanded after their victory, were cobbled together in an uneasy alliance with the Prussians and Dutch, an untrained army stiffened by a few veterans. This is an imaginative but accurate reconstruction of the five key figures, five points of view, and 4 days of the famous battle. Ian Gale's writing and storytelling are remarkable. Even though we know the outcome, we are completely absorbed by the unfolding drama, the tensions from mistakes made, the interaction between characters and their reactions under stress, the courage, the fear, the responsibility of command. He captures the whole feel of battle. On a lighter note, the family story featured this month is also a wartime one. It's The Shopkeeper's Daughter by Lily Baxter. By June 1944, Ginny Travis has been working in her father's furniture shop for the past 5 years, trying to keep it afloat. However, the continued bombing raids, plus her sister's untimely pregnancy, means the two girls are sent to stay with their aunt in Shropshire. The last thing Ginny expects to find in the quiet countryside is love, especially with an American soldier. Then tragedy strikes with news of their father's death in an air raid. The family is left almost penniless. With Shirley and her child to provide for, Ginny takes responsibility for them all. And as the horror of war rages on, Ginny will do whatever she must to protect everything she holds dear and build a new life for herself and her family. This book is engaging from the first page, with a gripping and gritty storyline and well-described characters. And finally, a trip down memory lane with something light-hearted. June Whitfield at the Beeb is a BBC radio compilation covering June Whitfield's radio career spanning more than 50 years. Narrated by June Whitfield herself, it incorporates comedy series such as Take It From Here, The Navy Lark, Round the Horn, Hancock's Half Hour, The Frankie Howard Show, and The News Hudlines, and appearances as Agatha Christie's Miss Marple. Whilst this is fairly short, it is a laugh-a-minute look back at some of those classics which we used to enjoy. If you would like to read some of these books, you can borrow or request all of them from your favourite audio library, such as Calibra, the RNIB Library, or Norfolk County Libraries. You can even listen to them on the internet or an Alexa smart meter.
Finish this edition of the Mardler magazine, we have an article from Georgina Reynard, science reporter for the BBC News website. Published on the 11th of March 2026, Georgina explores the surprising secret of hedgehog hearing. Hedgehogs may be communicating with more than just snuffles, grunts and snorts, according to scientists who have discovered the animal's hearing range. The creatures hear sounds at a much higher frequency than humans, meaning they could be signalling to each other with noises that we simply cannot hear. The discovery could be a game changer for the animal, which is in decline in the UK and Europe, according to Dr. Sophie Rasmussen at the University of Oxford. It could help scientists work out how to protect the animals from stressful noises when in rescue centres, or develop sound repellents to deter hedgehogs from going near machines that can kill them, such as cars, lawnmowers or strimmers. I wanted to investigate whether it would be possible to make targeted sound repellers for hedgehogs, because they are declining all over Europe. So we set out to measure the hearing of the European hedgehog for the first time, says Rasmussen. Working with sound experts who measure hearing in animals, she developed a soundtrack of pulses and beeps to play to hedgehogs from a rescue centre. The researchers measured the animals' brain responses to pinpoint the frequency of sounds that they could hear. We discovered, to my great surprise and joy, that hedgehogs can hear up to 85 kilohertz, and humans can hear up to 20 kilohertz, and all Sounds above that are called ultrasound. Dogs hear up to 45 kilohertz, while cats' range extends to 65 kilohertz. After building a 3D model of a hedgehog's ear, the scientists found it has a stiff chain of bones that allow high-pitched sounds to pass through efficiently, in a similar way to echolocating bats. It's amazing because this allows us to actually build targeted sound repellents that wouldn't bother us or our pets, she says. Thousands of hedgehogs are thought to die in road collisions in the UK and other European countries each year, and the animal is classed as near threatened by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Rasmussen hopes to work with companies to understand if audio devices could be designed that would repel hedgehogs from cars, lawnmowers or strimmers. Some cars already have devices fitted to deter large animals like deer. The Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders say that ultrasound whistles are widely available for consumers to buy. Chief Executive Mike Hawes suggested that although this study suggests they could offer greater protection for hedgehogs on our roads, more detailed research is needed to understand their effectiveness. Rasmussen says more research is needed to understand which specific noises would put off hedgehogs. Are they scared of screams, or should it be like a pulsating sound, she says. It would also be important to make sure the animals were not dissuaded from gardens, which have become an essential habitat as the countryside becomes less suitable. Rasmussen says the work opens up our understanding of the hedgehog's audio world. Thousands of hedgehogs are taken into rescue centres in the UK every year, where they could be exposed to stressful sounds such as machinery, humming, that humans cannot hear. The hedgehogs could also be communicating. When hedgehogs pass each other by, you can tell that they are interacting. Maybe that's just chemical reactions to smelling each other, she says. But imagine if they're actually blabbering on all this time and we just can't hear it.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate section of articles include planned store closures at Morrisons and Hughes Electrical, affordable homes in Bacton and budget accommodation in Bakersfield.
Morrisons has announced plans to close around 100 loss-making convenience stores, with a dozen at risk across Norfolk. The affected shops are former McColl's stores, which Morrisons took over in 2022, including 12 Morrisons Daily stores located in the county. A spokesman for Morrisons said, "The performance of all company-owned stores across our convenience business is subject to continuous review. This process has identified a number of stores, which were part of the McColl's acquisition, whose performance has been challenged for a number of years, and which are loss-making, despite remedial action. This situation has been exacerbated in more recent years by significant cost increases resulting from the government policy choices, which have made returning these stores to profitability even more difficult. Having completed the review, we are now proposing to take the tough but necessary decision to close a number of these stores over the next few months. Norfolk stores at risk of closure are The Street, Boardswell, Crown Road, Buxton Bridge Street, Fakenham Bridge Road, Gulston Madeleine Way, Gulston Barkis Road, Great Yarmouth Salisbury Road, Great Yarmouth The Street, Hempnall Station Road, Hopton-on-Sea Church Street, North Walsham Coleman Road, and Norwich Dereham Road, Norwich. The company did not specify which government policies it believes have impacted store performance. However, retailers across the UK have faced rising business costs, including increases to the minimum wage and national insurance. Despite the closures, Morrison said it still sees potential to open hundreds more franchise convenience stores in the coming years. The retailer said this dual approach is aimed at improving the quality of our convenience estate and making it stronger overall. Last month, Morrison's announced a consultation on job cuts at its Bradford head office, affecting fewer than 10% of roles. The company has also closed some cafes, convenience stores, florists, and fresh food counters as part of wider restructuring efforts, resulting in hundreds of job losses. Morrison's currently operates around 1,700 convenience stores and 500 supermarkets across the UK, employing approximately 95,000 people.
A new development of affordable homes is set to welcome its first families. St Andrew's Meadow in Bacton includes 47 properties built just a short walk from the coast. Of the homes, 28 will be allocated for affordable rent to families on the local housing register and will be let at up to 80% of market rate. These properties will be managed by Victory Homes, which alongside Flagship Homes is part of Bromford Flagship Live West. The remaining 19 homes will be available through shared ownership and include a mix of two-bed bungalows, two-bed houses and three-bed houses. Tony Tan, Managing Director of Flagship Homes, said, "It feels like no time at all since we broke ground here, and now we're days away from handing the keys to the first families." That's a moment worth pausing on. Affordable home ownership is genuinely hard to come by along this stretch of coast, which is why bringing 19 shared ownership homes to Bacton, alongside 28 for affordable rent, matters so much. The development was part funded by Homes England and delivered in partnership with North Norfolk District Council. The homes have been built with timber frames and they feature air source heat pumps and solar panels to keep the running costs low. "We've been busy across rural North Norfolk over the last couple of years building new homes in Warham, Sheringham and Walcott," Mr. Tan added. "These are the places where affordable housing has made a big difference, and St Andrew's Meadow is a brilliant addition to that picture." In addition to the homes, a 0.6 hectare parcel of land south of the village hall is being gifted to the parish council for use as a village open space and car park.
An independent electrical retailer is set to close 8 stores, putting 60 jobs at risk. Hughes Electrical is closing its Norfolk stores in Diss, Dereham, Hunstanton, North Walsham, Norwich Mason Road and Thetford, alongside its stores in Clacton and Wisbeach this Saturday. Hughes said it recognises the need to adapt and evolve its offer due to increasing operating costs, the rise of online shopping and changing customer expectations in store. A total of 35 staff are set to be affected by the store closures, who were told their roles were at risk of redundancy in group meetings on Monday, June the 1st. The business is also proposing to close its Norwich delivery depot in Mason Road, where a further 25 staff could be affected. An individual consultation process is underway, which is expected to take between 1 and 2 weeks. Those affected will have the opportunity to apply for a number of alternative positions across the business. Mark Wardell, Hughes CEO, said, "These have not been easy decisions to make. Many of those affected have worked with Hughes for a long time and played a huge part in the business we are today. All will receive the honesty, respect and support they deserve through this difficult process ahead. We understand the news will be very upsetting for our teams, but we have acted now to ensure the long-term success of the business. A smaller physical footprint will allow us to invest more online and in our remaining stores and better serve our communities, whether that's through retail, domestic rental, or via our business division." Hughes Electrical was founded in Lowestoft in 1921. 10 of its stores across East Anglia, including Fakenham, Great Yarmouth, King's Lynn and Norwich Hall Road in Norfolk, and Beccles, Bury St Edmunds, Ipswich, Felixstowe Road, Ipswich, Martlesham, and Lowestoft in Sussex will remain open. Its Colchester store will also remain open.
Plans to create an activity centre and budget accommodation at a former RAF airbase have been revived after a controversial proposal to house Afghan refugees there were withdrawn. Councillors could make a decision within months on whether to grant permission for the changes at the Jaguar building on the former RAF Coltishall site. Families in nearby Bedersfield have been sent letters informing them that the plans, originally submitted in 2023, are still in the pipeline. Officers at Broadland District Council have been talking to applicant BM Trust about the proposals and have signalled they could come before planning committee members this summer. The proposal is to use the buildings, including the former officers' mess at the airbase, for short-term overnight accommodation and as a short-term residential activity centre. The developers also want permission to use the site for educational visits, function room hire, and preschool community use. Papers lodged with the council state, it is thought that the proposed short-term accommodation could provide budget accommodation for a range of groups, organisations, and activities. It is thought that the rooms could be used as tourist accommodation for groups or individuals, as well as school trips, parent and child groups, and the local business community. In regard to the uses utilising the accommodation, the maximum expected members would be 120, which includes approximately 20 staff members. The proposals also seek permission to enable activity rooms to be hired out to businesses, schools, groups and organisations such as scout groups. Documents also suggest the accommodation could be used by film crews shooting in part of the former Coltishall site, which features a full-size replica of the Oval Office in the White House, as used by the President of the United States. This was originally built for the 2018 film Watergate. The set regularly features in films and dramas. The BM Trust previously put forward separate proposals seeking temporary permission for 12 months to use the buildings to house up to 200 Afghan refugees. But these plans, which sparked opposition among people in nearby villages, were withdrawn in March. Agents for the applicant have confirmed that there are no plans to house asylum seekers or refugees if the budget accommodation proposals are approved.
A new bistro has opened in a former fire station on the Norfolk Broads. Dotty's Bistro in Ludham has now opened its doors, offering a mix of brunch favourites and artisan baked goods for all to enjoy. Alongside its main menu, the place also offers a daily changing selection of seasonal specials, as well as takeaway options for those on the go. Amy Bailey, the owner of the site, said, "I have always wanted to have my own place and I couldn't have asked for a better venue. I have worked in and out of hospitality all my life and decided to take the leap." The bistro, named after her dachshund, welcomed its first customers on the bank holiday weekend, with queues waiting eagerly outside the doors. "It has been absolutely fantastic," the 31-year-old added. "I have been a bit shell-shocked because of how busy it has been, but I am really pleased. I am now looking forward to seeing how it expands, as I have so many ideas as it grows." The dog-friendly bistro is tucked inside the old fire station in the heart of Ludham Village, and is available to cater for special events and private hire.
Cromer Country Club is set to host a charity walk to raise awareness about water scarcity. The Walkathon for Water, organised by Hilton Grand Vacations and the We Are Water Foundation, will take place on Wednesday, June the 24th at 11 a.m. The event aims to raise funds for projects providing clean drinking water and sanitation solutions to affected communities. The walkathon will cover approximately 3 miles. Funds raised will support 2 projects in India and Mexico, benefiting more than 5,000 people. The route will begin at Cromer Country Club, follow a coastal path and include a refreshment break at the Blue Sky Cafe. The event is expected to conclude back at the country club by 1 p.m. Afterwards, younger participants can enjoy free time in the swimming pool. To participate, people can register on the Walkathon for Water, We Are Water website, or directly at the event for a minimum donation.
A long-running event which sees audience picnic nearby is set to welcome an international renowned musician. The Academy of St Thomas will host its midsummer concert at Sal Church near Reefham on June the 20th. The event, which has been running for 38 years, attracts large audiences who enjoy relaxing in the church's picturesque surroundings. Michael Collins, a renowned clarinetist and conductor, will perform with the orchestra once again. He will lead in concertos, having last played the Finzi Concerto with the orchestra in 1993 for its 20th anniversary. The concert we'll begin with an overture by Haydn, with Schubert's popular Symphony No. 5 rounding off the programme. Collins has an international career known for his virtuosity, versatility and artistic insight, and has performed with notable artists. His ensemble, London Winds, has appeared at the BBC Proms, Alborough Festival, Edinburgh Festival and Bath Mozart Fest. He was awarded an MBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours in 2015 for services to music. The concert starts at 7:30. Tickets for the concert are available from ticketsource.co.uk or on the door.
A fundraiser for the RNLI will feature a nostalgic comedy review. In the style of 1960s BBC radio comedy, the Fish and Fun Friday Radio Fun event will be held at Cromer Community Centre on July the 10th at 7pm. Tickets, including a choice of platter and dessert, are £16 from wegottickets.com from June the 15th. Scripts are performed with the kind permission of Paul Minette, Brian Leveson and John Finmore.
Our last few articles cover Thursford Gala Day, Cromer Pier's 125th anniversary, a 66th anniversary at the Horning Ladies Luncheon Club, and lots of wherry activity on the Broads.
One of Norfolk's best-loved attractions is hosting its biggest summer event yet, as it marks 50 years since opening. Thursford Gala Day will return this July, taking over the museum's grounds near Fakenham, with more than 300 exhibitors, including steam engines, vintage vehicles and classic cars. The event celebrates the legacy of founder G.T. Cushing, who began the museum in 1976, and will offer live entertainment and daring aerobatic displays. Charlie Cushing, general manager at Thursford, said, "Gala Day continues to become more spectacular. Now in our sixth year, the event has become a popular day for our visitors, and we are excited to reveal what's in store, once again, in what is a milestone year for the museum." Organisers say this year's programme is the biggest yet, featuring vintage bus countryside tours of the Thursford estate, a steam-powered trailer ride pulled by the museum's showman's engine, Victory, live music and garden entertainment. Entry also includes access to Thursford's Adventure Play Fair, a large outdoor park themed around a vintage fairground that opened last summer. The museum's vintage fairground rides, retail shops and cafe will be open throughout the day, along with food trucks including The Bucket List and Bubble and Melt. Mr. Cushing added, "It's no mean feat for a tourist attraction to reach a 50th anniversary, and we intend to celebrate in style on this gala day, with a big focus on a family day out, with the introduction of our Adventure Play Fair, a giant outdoor adventure play park themed around a vintage fairground. The Starlings aerobatic team will perform an exclusive aerobatic display over the fields of Thursford, and the day concludes with a big steam parade. Gala Day will be held on Sunday, July the 5th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. It is £16 for adults and £12 for children under 15, with free entry for under twos.
It has been a part of the core of the North Norfolk coast for more than a century. As one of the oldest piers in the region, Cromer Pier has stolen the hearts of many locals and tourists over the years with its stunning sea views and spectacular shows. From having one of the only remaining end-of-pier theatres left in the country to surviving a 100-ton rig crashing into it, there are few coastal structures like it. There has been a pier or jetty in Cromer from 1391. 125 years ago, London engineering firm Douglas and Arnott completed the current pier at a cost of £17,000. This pier continues to stand today, despite being damaged repeatedly by storms and the runaway rig. And now the town is coming together to mark its 125-year anniversary with a celebration that has even prompted a special message from Sir Stephen Fry. Mr. Fry said, "It is a happy place, a wonderful place, a place that all people who know and love Cromer know and love for itself. It has got a marvellous atmosphere about it. It's been historically home to wonderful comedy, entertainment, variety, you name it, as well as all kinds of secret assignations and people fishing off the side, and all kinds of fun and larks and basic seaside wonders. Congratulations, Cromer Pier." To mark the anniversary, several events are being held across the year in the town. Celebrations began at the very start of the year with the New Year's firework display. The main gala day is June the 8th, exactly 125 years since the grand opening. Party on the Pier will have a festival feel, with live music acts including Bojangles, the Cromer Academy School Choir and the Sheringham Shantymen. There will be thrilling performances including circus acts, stilt walkers and a traditional Punch and Judy show and a circus skills workshop. The party starts at 4 p.m. and runs until 7 p.m. Tim Adams, leader of North Norfolk District Council, which owns the pier, said, "It's a big magnet for tourism and it's a focal point of our community. We really do love it and are so lucky to work in a community so invested in it. It holds a lifetime of memories."
A female-only club, where hundreds of new friendships have blossomed, has marked its 60th anniversary. Horning and District Ladies Luncheon Club, an 80-strong group of over 60s who meet for lunch at the old Rectory Hotel every month, marked their diamond anniversary on Tuesday. The group, with long-standing members, including Helen Daniels, who turned 100 this year, has been a lifeline for people who live alone since its first meeting on May the 24th, 1966. In the last 5 months, they have welcomed 15 new members and are determined to keep expanding their community. Barbara Hughes, who has been a member for 8 years, said, "I moved here from Surrey, not knowing anyone. My neighbour, Tricia, invited me to the club one day, and I'd been coming for 8 years. We spend a lot of time together. She's the designated driver. She's a very good friend, a keeper. Everyone seems to click. They all really look forward to our monthly meetups. It brings people who live alone together." Miss Hughes has been the communications officer for the group for the last 3 years. Tricia Elson, the club secretary, said Miss Hughes' advertising on Facebook and through Age UK has helped the club gain new members. Each month, the club invites a guest speaker to lead a talk at the old Rectory Hotel. Alison Haynes, president of the club, was keen to make this month the perfect fit for the occasion. She said, "Because it is our diamond anniversary, I have arranged for a lady to join us and talk to us about diamonds and pearls. I joined the club with my sister 5 years ago after she was diagnosed with dementia. Our longest-standing member, Sheena Florence, has been coming to the club for 55 years. Miss Daniels added, I live for these meetings once a month. The people are delightful.
The Wherry Yacht Charter is partnering with the Museum of the Broads and Howe Hill Trust to present a special chance to enjoy Norfolk Broads heritage. Starting on Tuesday, July the 14th, one of the three remaining wherry yachts on the Broads will be at the Museum of the Broads in Stalham. For £38, guests can enjoy a two-hour experience, which includes a sail to Barton Broad, a ride on either the museum's steam launch Falcon or the electric launch Marsh Harrier, an entry to the museum. The wherry will be open for free viewing on July the 15th and 16th. On Thursday, July the 16th, the museum will host a Wherry Merry Night at the Museum event from 5 p.m. For £12, attendees can tour the wherry yacht and take 50-minute boat trips with musical entertainment provided by the Wherry Charity's resident lounge singer, Andy G. Fresh pizza from Monzu Pizza and a bar will be available. Tickets can be purchased at museumofthebroads.org.uk. Then the Wonder of Wherries event returns on July the 18th and 19th at Howe Hill, just outside Ludham. All five wherry yachts and pleasure wherries will be present, offering short sailing experiences from 10 a.m. for £15 per adult and £7.50 per child. Three-hour cake and sail experiences will also be available on the pleasure wherry Ardrea for £45. Advance booking is recommended at wherryyachtcharter.org. The Egyptian-themed wherry Hathor will be open for free public viewing with donations welcome. Howe Hill House and its gardens will be open, with live music and stalls selling Norfolk produce, arts and crafts. On Sunday, July the 19th, Sirens of the Helm will perform at 3 p.m, followed by vocalists Sandra B at 5:30 p.m. This entertainment is free for everyone to enjoy.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please, remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Wilson. Editing and producing this issue were Chris and Lorna Wilson. But do keep listening, as immediately following this edition of The Mardler, you can hear items from the Talking News Federation. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio! Cheerio. ENF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
And now here's Charlotte from Guide Dogs.
Hello, Charlotte from Guide Dogs here, back with another update about our Buddy Dog scheme. This has been a busy month for me in Buddy Dogs. Since my last update, I have matched another partnership. Miles is an 8-year-old boy who is now partnered with 16-month-old Labrador Cross Golden Retriever Angel. Angel was removed from the guide dog programme as she showed signs of anxiety in busy environments like city centres. She was assessed for early training, but it was felt that she wouldn't cope with this, so she stayed with her puppy raiser. She was put forward to be a buddy dog because she had spent a lot of time around children, as her puppy raiser's grandchildren visited often. She enjoys the company of children and would choose to play with them rather than adults, and would often be found curled up next to them. She does have a few cheeky behaviours, like picking up flip-flops and trying to instigate chase games with them around the house, but overall she is a lovely dog and we felt that she would be ideal for a family who perhaps had some dog experience already. I visited Angel at her puppy raiser's home to assess her and found her to be a bright, sweet-natured dog with lots of character, but overall a straightforward dog and easy to live with, so I accepted her immediately onto the scheme. Miles's family had applied for a buddy dog in the hope that a dog would be a friend to him and give him comfort and confidence. Miles was born very prematurely and has cerebral visual impairment, which affects how the brain processes input from the eyes. Miles loves the outdoors but lacks confidence, and as an only child he was often quite lonely in his own company. Miles's family already had a pet Labrador, but she is 14 and too old to be running about or playing, and had never really shown much interest in Miles. He does have some useful vision, which he can use to his advantage at school, but this causes lots of fatigue and can leave him feeling drained. Miles will often start a school day with decent vision, but as the day goes on and he gets tired, his brain is less able to process visual signals, so he will end the day with significantly reduced vision. His family were hoping for an affectionate dog that could be a source of comfort to him when he's had a bad day. I immediately thought of Angel after meeting Miles and his family. I felt that she had the perfect balance of cheekiness and character, an affectionate nature and a love of children. Miles lives in a rural area and the family avoid busy places as Miles finds them hard to cope with. As the family already have a pet dog, I needed to make sure the two dogs got on well, so I arranged to meet the family for a dog walk on our matching visit. Angel was immediately taken with Miles and ran along beside him. She was great at staying very close to him but never bumping into him. Every time anyone threw the ball for Angel, she would always bring it back to Miles. Angel also got on well with the pet dog. She was interested but well-mannered and did not pester her to play. She did show her cheeky side on the walk by stealing a football from a group of teenagers and running off with it. Thankfully, everyone saw the funny side, including the family, and we were able to retrieve the football without too much effort. At the end of the walk, we all decided it was a great match and arranged for Angel to be placed with the family the following week. Miles talked non-stop about Angel before her arrival and had a great time choosing toys and a bright pink collar for her. Since placing Angel with Miles, the family have reported that Miles is going out every day for walks with her and she loves to run beside him and play games of fetch. She also loves to sit next to Miles on the sofa and rest her head in his lap, which he finds very comforting after a busy day. Angel is also joining Miles on the school run and he has been talking to lots of new people at the school gates about his buddy dog. He is happy to answer questions about Angel, and he is getting more confident in talking about his own sight loss. Angel does still have her cheeky ways, like working out how to get over the stair gate so she can sneak upstairs and sleep on Miles's bed, but the family find it funny and enjoy her quirks. Now that Angel is placed with the family, I will leave them to get settled in, then catch up with them in 3 months to hear how everything is going. I hope you enjoyed this update. I will be back soon with more tales from Buddy Dogs.
Hello, I'm Lindsay, and the following interviews were kindly undertaken by Darren, a committee and visually impaired member of Sheffield VI Walking Group. He discovers what benefits the group offers to visually impaired people, no matter their age.
I'm here today with the Sheffield Visually Impaired Walking Group that has been going for 25 years, and we're just going to be speaking to some of the visually impaired walkers and the guides. So firstly, I'd like to speak to some of the VIs. So if I could speak with Carol, if you could give me a little bit of information about what you get out of the walks and, you know, do you like the longer ones, the shorter ones? What do you find best out of them?
I like the Wednesday walk because there tends to be more people on the Wednesday walk that I don't see very often. It is very difficult when you're visually impaired to catch up with other visually impaired people because you walk with the guides. So you kind of do that at lunchtime when you sit down and have your sandwiches. But I love the fact that you're out in all weathers and you can hear the birds singing. People can describe what's about. The terrain's always different, so you're not just walking on flat. You're going up hills, you know, and even in the highest parts of Sheffield sometimes.
I'm going to move on to Judith now, and she's going to give us a little bit about what she gets out of the walking.
Yeah, I'm Judith, and I've been with the group for about 5 years. But for me, it's been one of the best things I've ever done. I've made lots of friends. We meet up outside the walk as well. I find it all very challenging because of the sight thing, but also I just get such a buzz from it. But I love everything about it. I love meeting up. I like the walk. I like the challenge. There's nothing about it that I don't like. All the walks for different reasons.
That's very good. It sounds like you get a lot of social out of it, and it's keeping you fit and healthy. You get to meet people outside of the group as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we're like a little family, aren't we?
We've all made good friends,
which is good to hear.
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah,
now we're going to go on to a couple of the sighted guides. We've got Margaret and we've got Eileen, and we're just going to ask them of the things that maybe find challenging guiding us VIPs.
I wouldn't say it's really challenging other than having to really keep your eye on the terrain. We've got to tell the VIs what the terrain is like, you know, routes at particular hazard. But we're just aware of it and we make them aware of it. Most of them are quite capable anyway, even if they are totally blind. They're still quite capable of being guided and they enjoy it so much. But me personally, I just feel a sense of I'm needed now. I'm a widow, been widowed 8 years, which is when I joined, and it's good for me. So that's the main thing for me. It's good for the guides as well as the VIs.
And the fact that you're going out into the great outdoors and the countryside.
Yeah, various walks of various lengths, 4 different walks a week. It's easy to really hard. I don't do the hard ones, the hardest, longest, because a lot of us are nearly 80 now, so I don't want to be putting myself in that position. But the other walks, very enjoyable. It's all enjoyable, every bit of it. And I've got a lot of friends.
We've even been known to sing, haven't we, on the walks?
Oh, we used to sing all the
time. And do quizzes about, which year was this music from.
But we're still a jovial group, very jovial.
Which is very good. And what about yourself, Margaret? What do you find challenging with guiding the VIPs?
Well, I've joined the group almost 2 years ago now, at a suggestion by my daughter, and it changes your perception of people with visual impairment, because I think everybody thinks, oh well, they can't do this and they can't do that, and they can and they do, and they do it with enthusiasm, and they're very trusting, and it's just a superb group. We can have a good moan, we can have a good laugh, we can empathise with each other. People help each other if someone needs something, they don't know how to go about getting it. It's just a really enjoyable thing to do. And when we're out on the walks, sometimes we might walk 4 or 5 miles on the shorter walks. You don't know you've done it because you're chatting away and enjoying what's around you. It's a great thing to do.
A past guide, Mike, in his 90s, and recipient of an MBE, also gives his insights into the Sheffield VI Walking Group. However, due to technical problems with the original interview recording, Mike's comments are instead brought to life by TNF reader Alan.
I've been a keen hill walker and hill climber all my life. So when the Sheffield Visually Impaired Walking Group was first set up, I jumped at the opportunity to become a guide to them, and it was one of the best things I have ever done. During the whole of 19 years, I guided members on walks in the Peak District, also on Snowdon and the Yorkshire Dales, and I've never regretted it. The people I got to know and love are wonderful people who simply will not allow their disability to get in their way of what they enjoy most, the great outdoors, the wind, the sunshine, the rain even, and the companionship of fellow members.
Well, that's very good. And I think, on the whole, it's all about getting outside and having that fresh air.
Definitely was a lifeline because I didn't know anyone.
So we can all agree that it's a social, healthy walking group.
It gives you a brand new start on life, really. It's a whole new thing, and it's not just about that. It opens up doors to lots of other things as well.
It does, yeah, because you get involved in other things through that.
I think the fact that we've got guides, the guides, by what they do, are givers. They are not takers.
Mm.
And they don't just help us with the walks. If you need anything doing other than that, especially somebody like Eileen, are always there for whatever.
Yep.
And if they can't do it, they'll find somebody that does.
Yeah, they're very supportive.
Yeah, very supportive.
And without the sighted guide, we'd be lost, wouldn't we?
Well, we would.
Oh, definitely.
I couldn't get out. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Either.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. I think we're going to wrap up from here, and we'll look forward to the next walk.
And now it's time for a quiz that takes a look at the adverts of yesteryear. TV adverts, most of them, but a bit of fun anyway. Let's see how many you remember. Some of these are jingles, so forgive the croaky voice as we go. Question one. You'll wonder where the yellow went. Blank. Question two. It beats as it sweeps as it cleans. Question three. What was made to make your mouth water? Question four. A blank a day helps you work, rest and play. Question five. Which automotive company used the catchphrase Vorsprung durch Technik? Question six. All because the lady loves what? All because the lady loves blah. Question seven. Blank, blank, the too good to hurry mint. Question eight. Who used the strap line, because I'm worth it? Because I'm worth it. Question nine. A million housewives every day pick up a and say. Okay. Question ten. Who used to sing famously, there's only one tea in? And question 11. Which brand of what used amusing chimpanzees doing strange things, principally led by Mr. Shifter? There are your 11 questions. I hope that stirred a few memories. Roger back with the answers to our advertising quiz. Question one. You'll wonder where the yellow went. Yes, of course, when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. Question two. What used to beat as it swept as it cleaned? Hoover beats as it sweeps as it cleans. Question 3. What was made to make your mouth water? Yes, opal fruits. No longer called the same thing, but still on the market under a different name. Question 4. A what a day used to help you work, rest and play. Until they weren't actually allowed any longer to use that claim. It was Mars. A Mars a day. Question 5. Vorsprung durch Technik was used by Audi. Audi. Progress through technology or technique. Question 6. All because the lady loves milk tray chocolates. 7. What was the too good to hurry mint? It was Murray Mint. Murray Mint, the too good to hurry mint. Who says, in question 8, because I'm worth it, the ultimate catch line for selling you L'Oreal products. Question 9. A million housewives every day pick up a can of beans and say, beans means Heinz. Yes. Question 10. The answer is, there's only one tea in Taifu. Taifu tea. And question 11. Mr. Shifter was one of the amusing chimpanzees who helped to sell PG Tips tea. PG Tips. And I'll take that tip as time to leave you for now. Thanks for listening.
TNS Soundings.